I've about the same number of slides for 5 minutes. You're going to see the really talented part of me. This is the NBCEC vision. There's a series of traits out there that are ERTs that we really want to focus our selection on. And for some of them, we are data rich, and others, we're data poor. We have phenotypes and pedigrees that we've been working with a lot. We need R&D for genetic evaluations to get those implemented and continue to improve the accuracy of the methodologies that go into that. We need to develop a transfer mechanism now that we are out of the service business, and that's something I mentioned that we wanted to do at the University of Georgia, produce our EPDs and put them into the ERT portfolio as indicator traits or as the ERTs. The data poor, really, we ought to be thinking about the other option very much, and we've heard other speakers talk about this. This is in the calculation of MBVs, and there's a merger opportunity, or if there's no data, we put them through a translator that gets them to an EPD with a particular accuracy, and that's what Steve's program would do for us, even with the absence of phenotypes. And we do this in some kind of form of validated observations. And this is something that we really need to start to address, because in the beginning, we were the only ones in validation, NBCEC, so we picked and choose how we wanted to approach these things. We, on the fly, changed the rules when the different types of things came to us, like Dick talked about. But now there's other organizations getting involved in validation, and we have to get on the same page so that we don't say over here it works and somewhere else they say it doesn't. We talked about a database over here that we've sort of turned back to the industry and said, we've put in a couple of years of efforts to make that a single database. We just can't do it. We can't burn any more resources on that. But there's an opportunity for databases over here that will be centralized, and I've mentioned that before. We need a database up here where everything comes together. If we do and move that stuff into decision support, we feel this vision gives every individual an opportunity to assess an animal both based on its economics for particular traits and its overall impact. So what I'm going to concentrate on now is this section right here, because obviously that's the one that we're talking about when we start thinking about whole genome scan. But I want to point out, nothing that's going on in this little box is really that different, whether we've got a few SNPs or a lot of SNPs. We still have to get associations. We have to take those associations and translate them into a breeding value. We have to find out how to merge that breeding value. It just becomes a little bit more complex, and maybe even a little bit, or as Mark showed out, maybe quite a bit, more in terms of how much of it we can explain. And that was the coolest slide I've made in years, and I just wanted to share that.
Go back.
Don't do it again. I'd love to. Okay, whole genome selection is really, as already been defined for us several times, we are getting genotypes, and the foundation for that is these training data sets. So that's been talking about. The large panels are going to be used across numerous populations, which is nice, because if we're using a standard, or at least the core of a standard, and we're applying that to different traits, and I do it in one population, meat animal research does it in one population, we're not comparing different SNPs. We're looking at these same results, maybe for the same traits, and it does give us some opportunities to build competences that we may not have before. Okay, if we look across there, that's what we might end up with. There's a whole list of traits that go across the top. There's our loci from 1 to 50,000. Dorian mentioned that each one of those loci gives us some kind of a value for a particular segment of the chromosome, and he talked about summing them up. And so our job, really, once the tool has been built and out there and now just can be accessed by a cost, is to go across that top and start completing those traits, figuring which ones are ERTs, which ones are indicator traits. There are alternate SNP panels out there that can be used. We're going to focus on this one because that's the one that we're using quite a bit in our studies. I want to briefly mention four studies to show you some of the collaborative efforts we're currently involved in developing these. These four studies are ongoing right now. The helpfulness one, the primary institution is Iowa State. Those are the folks in charge. Industry funding partner is at Pfizer Animal Genetics. I called them genomics the other day, and so it's genetics. These are the industry partners that are involved in this. There are two ranches that are providing us information or cattle, and Iowa State University is also, their research herd is involved in this. And so what I want to show you here is we're starting to build external to sort of the experiment station programs, resources that are based on industry collaboration, in this case funded by an industry partner, bringing together researchers from Iowa State and actually other universities, which I didn't mention. This one here is focused on fatty acid composition, minerals. There's Cocker's data being collected, and we're also going to look at shear force and taste panel assessments of these particular steaks that may differ in the fatty acid composition because, as one person said, we don't want to make a healthy product. Broccoli is healthy? I think was the example he used. So we're going to be checking the fatty acid composition impact on taste and with these panel assessments. The other one is animal health, or another one is animal health. Colorado State, Mark, is doing that. The partner is pending. We'll see in a little bit about where that is. Rex Ranch is providing us the data on this. It's a composite population up in the Sand Hills of Nebraska. 2 years of a lot of steers going to Lamar, where Colorado has the opportunity to work with them, Colorado State. Five Rivers owns these calves, but the phenotypes are going to Colorado State, and they've had access to these animals, and they have abused them. Here we have the pulls or no pulls. In this kind of trait, your optimum is to get 50% because it's a yes, no. 50, well, we missed. 51% got sick. An incredible, a lucky thing for us, not so much for the people who are purchased and own those animals. We're following up with lung scores. We did serial ultrasound on those animals. I think there are three ultrasound measures made on them. Feedlot performance in terms of gain during that time period. Carcass data, as well as temperament, and we looked at shoot score and flight speed. Blood samples are being sent around to immunological labs, as well as somebody who's working on things like cortisol. So we are profiling these. When you hear people start talking about taking your money and focusing down on a group of animals and make sure you understand the phenotypes and get a lot of phenotypes involved, these are the kind of populations that we're talking about. Reproduction is another one. Milt Thomas and New Mexico State is the leader for the NBCEC on that project. It's an NRI grant. This one is a little bit different in terms of what needs to be done. The discovery data is coming out of Camp Cooley. You heard that mentioned earlier. It's a Brangus population. But we put commercial ranches, we've collected data and DNA on commercial ranches across a lot of different environments. This is also going to lead into our adaptation population, but we got them down in New Mexico, in fescue country, down in Florida, hot and humid, and up in cow heaven, as Dick calls it. At the Rex Ranch, we also went back and captured a population of individuals, 3,600 females born in that year, and we followed them now through their third pregnancy, and that's our stayability data set. And that particular data set has matured. We have those own heifers' growth. We have birth, weaning, yearling, and three preg checks. So we have the growth curve at least as best as we can possibly get it under that kind of a management system. We have the reproductive success. They get rid of opens. So we have first pregnancy, we have rebreeding, and then we have the third pregnancy check. And we have the maternal performance based on two calves. So when we sit down and think about this thing here, if you think about the fact that calves from this operation are being fed down in Lamar with a whole ton of health things taken care of, when you look at the female population where we now have maternal growth and other reproductive characteristics on those females, we've got a portfolio of traits now that spans all the way across the top here. And when we talk about the use of this type of technology, this is really what we're talking about, is filling in those kinds of things with very well pedigreed or rather performance tested individuals. Well, there is a question. Mark raised it, I raised it this morning. It's a very simple question, is will this whole genome selection actually work? There was a USDA grant, it was for $5 million, that just put out there to get back proposals that tried to demonstrate whole genome selection. And there are a couple of phases to this where we have to really focus on what we're actually doing. There's the discovery, and Mark showed that you can do discovery with EPDs or phenotypes. They're different. We think they work. They're going to be validating that in those populations. What if you do them on phenotypes? What if you do them on EPDs? There's the validation of the individual panels. We can't skip validation just because we're using a new whiz-bang tool. We still have to go out and make sure that those things are replicable, whether we're looking across breeds, within breeds, or whatever. And then there's another part to this, and that's the validation of the process, the whole concept of whole genome selection. These things up above, those first two, are really what Dorian called the other day whole genome evaluation. How do we get the right effects estimated for these animals, and how do we show that it's repeatable in terms of us being able to estimate it? But then there's this process of validating the process of selection. The way we're going to approach it in the USDA grant that I'm currently working on with Kurt Van Tassel and Jerry Taylor is there are discovery populations for carcass traits. Now, these were done at the University of Missouri, and they're done with DNA, the Angus Sire repository, plus some other individuals from various ranches that have carcass data. But for most part, the EPDs represents the phenotypes. This is analogous to what's being done in the dairy side of this particular bovine project, where they looked at proven bulls, ran the tests on thousands of those, and are trying to see how well they can predict the future performance of progeny of those bulls from that. Well, if you think about this being a discovery population, or the meat animal research centers being the discovery population, or something coming out of Canada or Australia, we still need some population that we go in and say, well, how well did this particular MBV predict? We've talked about it as being a reference population. Well, here's one we're trying to build. Harris Ranch, for those of you who don't know them, is not a ranch, but it's an organization that has individuals who can sign cattle to them, either retain ownership or put them in the program. We've coerced three people, Jack Cowley on our advisory board being one of them, that do consign to their premium program to give us DNA samples on their bulls, and we're going to run a genome scan on those bulls. So now we have the what-if ones. Anybody wants to come in and says, we have a set of trained data or effects that we want to look to see if it works, we would run those or give them the genotypes. They would run those effects. And then we're going to collect phenotypes in our project exclusively on the progeny carcass from those bulls, parent identify them back to the bulls, and have that data to show how well did those predictions of the bulls' genetic merit match either the EPDs that you get from their progeny or the prediction of their progeny performance. I had to say that just to get Dick mad. He doesn't like the way I describe that. Okay, there are some issues when we think about doing this. Are we demonstrating whole genome selection? Actually, all we're doing, in my mind, is validating a panel to say it does have some predictive thing. If we really wanted to, and I'll talk about a little bit more of the process, it would be nice if they'd have given us 25 years of this dollars and we could have done multiple generation selection. But that, we'll get back to that in a minute. You've heard some conversation about... Oh, we do have a point. You heard some conversation about multiple panels that could be used. And these are what are available. You can think about the 300K. You can think about the sequencing up here. But there is some value, we felt, when we put this grant together in having other panels available. And those panels sort of related to the value of an individual animal to a population, all the way down to maybe all we wanted to do is identify its parent, identify it in a parent identification and get some information out of it, perhaps a replacement heifer or somebody we're managing in a feedlot. Maybe we need a little bit more on replacement females. And then when we have the high profile individuals, replacement bulls are those we select, we move up the chain there in terms of how much you spend. It's kind of amazing to me that we haven't included it in our grant. I was asking Heather Burrows in Australia about the CRC there, who's actually sat down and penciled out a dollar value one might assign to a particular animal. So you could say, this is what we can afford to put on an AI bull, on a herd bull, on a replacement heifer, et cetera. And so we're going to collaborate with a person out in Australia that Heather has on her program as an economist, and actually we're doing some work with one at hopefully at Colorado State as well to look into those things. So when we go down here and say, let's do this reduction, first thing I got to thinking about when we were thinking about this particular thing is how do you reduce? They say, well, we've got a 50K up here. Mark showed us this long string of effects up here. Some of them had quite a few blips on them. You say, well, let's just go along there and pull off 400 for birth weight. All right, that makes sense. We explain 70% of the variation and away we go. And then you go down and say, well, here's the weaning weight, here's calving ease, here's maternal, here's, and you come down there, we've got umpteen of these 400 things, and that's not going to work. All right? So as we start to think of this reduction process, I guess we have to ask the question, what do we reduce to? Do we do it for individual traits? Do we do it for individual roles the animals may play, replacement heifers, terminal individuals? We really had to give some thought to this concept of reduction. What I'd like to do is go back to this table and say, we got all of this filled in. We come down from the MVBs. We go across all of this. Somewhere in there is a profit index. And that profit index may be different depending on whether we're looking at selling calves at weaning, whether we're looking at we're the person who buys them at weaning and are taking them through slaughter. I'm retaining ownership. We have a summation down here of all these effects supplemented with EPDs or these supplementing EPDs, and out there somewhere is a profit index. And to me, if we go back to the ERT concept, we could put all of these through the decision support type stuff to come up with these values. We put them through there, this becomes our trait. Then we go back and say, when we start doing reductions, rather than worrying about individual traits, let's start worrying about profit indexes. Just the way the industry is starting to put out their profit indexes for the various breed associations. We ought to be able to do this as well. While we're working with the Rex Ranch, they're part of what AIG, Farm Management, Paul Janot is the head of that. I asked him about this, and he said, well, they've got 40 MBAs. They ought to be able to come up with something. So with all that Rex Ranch data, we are actually going to start computing. Since they do a very good job with their economics at that particular ranch, we're going to start computing different ways of assessing profit and think about, when we go to this reduction, making this reduction perhaps on a profit index, these up here will still be trade-oriented as we wanted to get to those profit indices. Okay, ideally, if we wanted to validate this process, we'd do a good old-fashioned selection program. Right, we'd go through and we'd get a trained panel and we'd use it for selection over multiple generations so we could check this decay people talk about as the linkage disequilibrium breaks up and reassigns and things like that. And we'd compare it to a control, randomated, conventionally selected. This grant that we have is for 4 years, so doing this is really not an option. So everything you hear us talking about when we say we're going to validate the process of whole genome selection is really sort of validating the evaluation part of it and saying maybe over one cycle or two cycles that we might be able to fit in over the next couple of years, we might be able to show something relative to its efficacy. I think we really have to face that if we want to demonstrate this as a process, we need to go into species that have shorter life cycles and just have somebody go through this with mice or chickens or something like that. But not to be undaunted, we are going to try to do something. And here's what we're going to do in terms of the process. Every year, the Rex Ranch identifies about 250 bulls they put on a performance test. So we're going to ask the question, how do we identify those? We have trained data, either because we have our partners who are getting involved in the reproductive study and the stayability study and the health study provide us those pieces of information on these bulls, or use other trained data like those out of Missouri, we're going to look at the selection of these 250 bulls that go in there. How different would it be if we went out and did some sampling of individuals? We have a portion of these bulls come off test, so there's another opportunity to demonstrate some kind of selective process. If we have the 250 and they're going to performance test, they told me they're not going to give up their normal routine just because we've got this new tool. So we could go through and do some what-ifs at this stage in the first year or two and say what proportion of these 250 should you have selected given the DNA information and the performance versus what you would have done if you didn't. And currently we have 3 years of this, this type of data in hand. We don't have the 250 for the first 2 years because they've already been selected. These bulls in the first year that represent about 100 or so are the sires of a group of animals that are going through that we're parent identifying back to them. So we will have progeny information both on the female and the carcass side of things. But I guess we do have to ask the question, when we start doing this, everything I think we're doing in terms of validation of the process is a little bit juvenile compared to what we might have been able to do if we got really involved in a full-fledged selection program. And I don't want you to think that when we talk about validating the process in this particular project, that we're really doing it with a selection program. We're trying to find ways, just like the Bean Animal Research Center, of making sort of informed comparison that give us a little more additional confidence. Okay, whole genome selection is a fledgling process. Its potential is great. The challenge is in the organization, and we've heard this a lot, unprecedented opportunity. But if you counted the number of animals they're doing at the Meat Animal Research Center plus the bulls that are in the population, you count up all those animals we're doing. Steve, you're doing a whole bunch up here, I assume, as well. This is ongoing now. There's going to be in excess of 10,000 to 15,000 animals genotyped over the next year, I think, across a variety of populations, and a lot of them very well. And so my closing statement for BIF is next year should really be some fun. Or we're going to go back to phenotypes and pedigrees and say, let's get out of the genome selection business. All right? I'll close with that.
Any questions for John?